Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special D-Day edition of the program. 78 years now since Allied forces swarmed into occupied Europe to turn the tide. A heavy, heavy price was paid, as we know, and we discussed that last week with Memorial Day. Right now in France, a group of 30 American veterans is getting the kind of tribute that fits the collective sacrifice the Allies contributed all those years ago. Everywhere these veterans go with the Best Defense Foundation, a hero's welcome is waiting. There are a couple female veterans we've had the absolute pleasure of meeting here on Hometown Heroes. Dorothy Jones from the Navy, Betty Rosevear from the Army. They're both 101 years old and have been wowing French crowds all weekend. It's always meaningful when paratrooper Tom Rice is there. At age 100, this may be his final trip to Normandy. A recent mishap foiled his plans to recreate his D-Day parachute jump on the anniversary, but we left off with Tom behind enemy lines 78 years ago on June 6, 1944, and he told us he had no idea where he was.
These guys were coming down the road. It must have been 8 or 10 of them coming down the road, and we clicked them and met them, and we stood up and kind of conversed, and one of them came to me and said, "I've got a hand grenade with the pin pulled. You cannot put the pin back in a hand grenade. It's not possible because the bend is bent."
Right.
And he probably didn't have the pin anyway. So here he is with a hand grenade, squeezing it like almighty, and if you ever let loose of it, that spoon goes up. You know what the hand grenade is like.
Yeah.
And it fires the cap, and it goes down the train of powder, and then 5 seconds it goes. Oh, he said, "I got a hand grenade with a pin pulled." I said, "Okay, give it to me." Had everybody get down. I got down and rolled over to the ditch, dropped it in the ditch, rolled back, and by the time I got to the middle of the road, the thing exploded, and I'm covered with water. So we went on down the road a little further. No enemy. What is this, the game we're playing here?
Hold on a second. Why did you want the hand grenade? Why did you put yourself in greater danger?
Because I was responsible for those guys, and I just took it on myself. I was a ranking guy there, even mm-hmm. though I may not have been. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I found out who the guy was that had a hand grenade, and he was a lieutenant, and I'm just a staff sergeant.
But your leadership qualities,
there you go,
rose to the occasion.
Yeah, right. I had to.
Yeah. So. Right, sorry for interrupting. I'm sure a lot of people are saying, "Wait, if that guy, that's his problem. That's not your problem."
So we broke up into groups and went on down the road. I'm saying to these guys, "Nothing's happening here, but I saw a house on the side of the road about 50 yards back," and said, "We got to investigate this." So I set about 5 of them around to the back of the house. And Floyd Martin and me and another guy went to the front of the house. I said to Floyd Martin, "Don't bang on the door like an ugly American. Just knock, you know." He banged on it with his rifle, but you could hear it from probably 2 kilometers away. And after about 30 seconds or so, a Frenchman came to the door. Blasé as could be, you wouldn't believe this, in a long white nightgown from shoulder to floor. Mm-hmm. With a white tousled nightcap.
Wow.
With a dish with a candle in it lighted. Now, if you were in that situation, what would you think or say or do?
That's a good question. What'd you do?
I started to laugh.
I think I probably would have laughed.
I started to laugh like you can't believe. He didn't respond to anything, so I just pushed him aside and went in. 3 or 4 of the guys followed behind me, and I unloaded the map and put it on the floor and tried to get him to tell us where we were. He finally saw the word Carentan, and he pointed in that direction. His wife came out, dressed the same way. Uh-huh. That was no laugh. I didn't laugh at that one. After trying to talking with him and not frightening him, he said he'll want to be excused for a minute. So we did okay. So he went out, and he got 6 rounds of ammunition. He gave us 4, and he kept 2. And so we left right away, assured him we're not going to do anything. Went out on the road again with 3 of us, walking in the ditch real low, and a lieutenant ahead of me yelled, "Hey, Sergeant, come here." Now, he was standing at a large gate where cattle would go enter and come out, and it was a pasture field in there. He was standing there and said, "Sergeant, I want you to walk around this field on the edge. I'm going to stay right here and wait." He had a carbine rifle, a short one, with a metal stock on it. This guy was bound to, had it in his mind, he's going to get a sniper. I'm a bait.
Thanks a lot.
I knew Wigwatchell was exactly what he's doing, so I walked that perimeter 600 and some yards, and I had my trigger finger ready to go, and I had that submachine gun up, you know, looking into the trees. Mm-hmm. I got back to the point where he set me off. He was gone. I learned a couple things. Never arrive at your point of departure as a final destination, because they could have seen it, could have watched me. 50-some years later, New York staff writer called, wanting to come out and interview me. He took 100 pictures of me for all what reason, I don't know. Then he started asking questions. And on the question period, he asked me to explain some heroism. I said they were all heroes. And then it hit me. I'll explain what happened right there. And I told him what happened, what that lieutenant did. I said, this is a situation of cowardice. They printed that story. They printed my picture with it. And I hope that son of a gun saw it.
If he made it through the war.
If he made it, yeah, if he made it. I figured, this guy's going to get somebody killed. But so we wandered around there, out in fields, and a horse was had been hit with shrapnel. A medic I had with me, Robert Schill, he patched him up with sulfadiazone, and we used the horse as a protection to get to some other point. Went into a house, searching the houses, and I crossed a window, and I had a rifle shot come through for the sniper. It hit just in front of me and caught me in the leg. It was a hard, like I was hit like a baseball bat almost, you know. So I could pull the pant leg up and pulled it out and put it in my pocket. I never know what happened to it after that.
So this is your first day.
Yeah.
And you're
first
already
day.
Hit.
First day. This is June 6th.
And you've already got a wound in your leg.
Yeah, I got a wound that I didn't pay too much attention to. It didn't bother me that much, crying out loud. I'm not going to medic and say, give me a Purple Heart or make a record of this baloney. But I've known lieutenants who've done that.
Sure.
But we began to hook up with some of the guys. And on the road, we found maybe 15 or 20 of them. Major Allen was there. He organized us into a small group, put our packs down, drop our packs, don't take anything else with you except your ammunition. We're heading toward La Barquette Lock. Now, the set of locks there. And the Germans closed the locks to flood the entire area.
Right.
The locks were closed. We were going to open them. Now, by the time the locks were opened and the water flowed out and drained into the English Channel, the battle would have been miles beyond it. So I figured, this is a phony, crazy, stupid objective. But we went down there, and we ran into the 6th German Parachute Infantry Regiment. They were 3,000 in strength. The battalions were in two or three different places. One was in Perrier, and they were having a good time. They were having a party. And a messenger came in and said, they're coming, they're coming. The aircraft were coming in. They weren't bombarding yet, but he heard all these aircraft coming, and the parachutes are dropping. In the British zone, they dropped dummy parachutes with explosives on them. So when they hit the ground, the explosive went to attract all the Germans over there. So things were pumping on the ground. So Colonel Heidi, who was a commanding officer there, he got these guys organized. One battalion was to go to the beach.
And we're talking about the German forces.
Yeah.
Colonel Heidi was with the German forces.
See, they were 300 feet above us.
And you said 3,000 strong. How many do you think were with you?
It was 50.
3,000 versus 50?
50. Well, not quite yet. They were broken into three battalions.
Okay.
And the battalion, one battalion was to go to the beachhead and to get in between us and the landing forces to disrupt that landing.
Right.
We met them at a place called Pinamy. Their second battalion evidently was a little bit north, but near the beach. They were coming south. Rifles slung on their shoulder. Did you see Saving Private Ryan?
Sure.
You remember these guys taken out with that captain looking for Private Ryan, smoking cigarettes and rifles slung? Yep. These Germans were singing their national anthem and whatnot. Going toward Carentan, another battalion was in another opposite direction, some distance from them, going to W4, which was a blockhouse. They had Goliaths there with 200 pounds of dynamite on little automatic wheelbarrow kind of thing. and they would control them by radio, and they wanted to get those things in there to blow up any of the American forces that were coming in. Mm-hmm. But when the guys did come in, the W-4 had been knocked out, and these crazy little machines were running around. The guys would go up to them, put hand grenades on them, and then back off. And that's what went. But anyway, we got into a big battle with maybe 400 Germans.
And this is, now we're hearing why you said earlier that you had the worst possible drop.
Yeah.
So there's 50 of you, there's 400 Germans.
400 Germans.
And it's still dark?
It's light.
The sun has come up. It's the morning of June 6th.
Yeah. But on the way down to La Barquette Lock, three of us were ordered to go to the lock and outpost it. So I didn't get to Penemy, which was maybe 300 yards from me. I was at La Barquette Lock. So we outposted it that night. We figured some of the Germans in Carentan are going to come down on patrols, mm-hmm. whatnot. 400 of them are in battle with 50 Americans. We captured them all.
Wow.
Amazing. Captured them all. So we set up that night because I figured certainly there's going to be some Germans coming down finally trying to find out what's going on. I set up about six stakes. I set wire between the stakes. We hung wire from the stakes vertically and tied tin cans on them. In the tin cans, I put bolts and nuts and all kinds of things. I mean, it's a silly thing, but it's kind of creative there. Mm-hmm. So any patrol coming through has to come down that way. And he's not going to be able to see that because it's so dark and the metal is dark and it's kind of low. He's going to trip on it. 2 o'clock in the morning, patrol came through. I was situated right in the corner. The orchard is long leg and the short leg. I was right in the corner of the short leg. The other two guys were on the long leg. And we were tied together, wrist to wrist, with parachute suspension line. If any noise or anything you hear comes through there, you're alerted for some reason. We stayed 2 hours on and then slept. We alternated that. Just jerked those cords. And we just start shooting out there. German patrol came through. We got one of them. He might have been his only man. I'm not sure. Can't prove it. But he was out there, and he moaned all night long. One of the guys had experience as working in a mortuary, so he took his trench knife and went out there and finished him off. And so we pulled him in the morning. We dug a trench for him in the orchard, and We cut some limbs off the tree and made a cross out of it. I still have his parachute wings, cloth wings. I hid them on my shoe, so if I ever captured with those things, boy, I'd be in real trouble. And none of us got hit.
None of them were hit there, but Tom Rice would be wounded later during the Battle of the Bulge. He is one of 30 veterans in Normandy this week with the Best Defense Foundation. And if those kind of battlefield return missions touch your heart, perhaps that's a cause you'd like to support. You can follow the Best Defense Foundation on social media, and I have relevant links posted for you at hometownheroesradio.com. It's time for our final break, but we'll hear more of this amazing 100-year-old D-Day paratrooper story when we come back. We'll also hear what General Dwight Eisenhower and President Franklin D. Roosevelt had to say 78 years ago when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.
Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.